And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
How great is that?
Yeah.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Aaron. How are we doing?
It's going to be one of those days.
Yes.
So it is October 27th, 2024. We are recording this particular program, and I'm sure we will replay it later. So, and it says October 26th on the website. I've already made a mistake. It's going to be one of those.
You've been doing that a lot lately.
It's going to be one of those kind of days. I'm tired. Hey, so the election is November 5th, just in case you missed that somehow and you've been living in a cave.
Yeah, vote and get it over with, please.
Yes, do. Please. Turn your ballot in. So if you don't want to put it in the mail, I would say at this point, probably, you know, if you have to mail it, do it. But you could take it to the clerk's office. You could take it to your local Republican headquarters. You can have your neighbor deliver it. You sign, you know, have them sign the back. They could take it in for you. If you live in California, ballot harvesting just means someone else can deliver your ballot to the registrar or voters. They have to sign the back of the envelope. I mean, you sign in the real place as the voter, but there is a spot for them. They sign it, turn it in.
Right. They can't fill it out for you.
No. Don't give them your blank ballot, but fill it out, get it all done, have somebody deliver it. But get that stuff turned in so the signatures can all be verified and they're all ready to be counted. I know that here in Shasta County, if there's an issue with the signature, they contact the voter and they get that fixed, because I've had several people tell me that.
Yeah, you've had people call.
Over the years, we've had lots of people call. Different issues with signatures, so that's good. They're actually checking. And if you need voter information, if you're in the state of California, look up the California GOP. They have information for you on there. Shasta County, we have ShastaGOP.com. That has voter guide, voter information, candidate information, and endorsements from the committee.
And it is National Civics Day, which
My gosh, so this is even better.
Yep. Importance of civic elections, I believe, is what it says.
And so for all the people who plan on waiting until the last minute and then say it doesn't matter because the presidential election was called, I want you to really think about it. We have a bunch of propositions on the ballot. Prop 36, regardless of where you are on all the other ones, 36 has got to be a yes. We need to bring crime back to crime again.
Yeah.
It'd be highly unlikely that one doesn't pass, but we need your vote on that. You have school boards, you have city councils, board of supervisors. Some districts don't have that, but some do. So you have all those other folks. You know, Congress is, the House is up every 2 years. Every member of Congress is up for election every 2 years. There are your term limits. So make your vote count. And go cast it.
Yeah, you got school boards, you got judges, you got all kinds of people.
Yeah,
we didn't
have any judges on ours this time. I don't know about other places in the country, but there's always a lot of stuff. So
there's a big reason to vote.
There are lots of places to get information on local things, propositions, and candidates and whatnot. So make the calls, ask your neighbors, ask people who think like you to, you know, take a look at what they're doing and where they're getting their information and what they're recommending. We've been running lots of ads in Shasta County on Facebook, Instagram, all over the place. So hopefully you have seen those, because the committee spent quite a bit of time raising money and doing that for the candidates. So without further ado, our guest is Dr. Shizong Chen. He has not been on our show since July 30th of 2023. Can you believe that?
It's been that long.
I know. I thought I made a mistake. Another mistake, just to be clear. I looked back and I thought, what the heck has been going on? So anyway, we have been remiss. He's been busy. He's a busy guy. But I listed the other shows that he has done with us because we always learn a lot. He's been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He has founded, co-founded, or been spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. He began his activism in 1989 when he helped organize supporting activities during the 1989 Beijing student movement. He was outraged by the June 4th massacre. He founded the Tiananmen Square Foundation and has served on the board of the Press Freedom Guardian and was elected as the president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the U.S. And upon learning of the brutal persecution of the Falun Gong in China, Dr. Chen founded the Falun Gong Human Rights Working Group in 2001 and has since submitted over 100,000 cases of human rights abuses against the Falun Gong practitioners to UN special reporters. He has also founded and is president of the Conscience Foundation, a nonprofit organization to publicize and remind people that the human conscience is the very essence of humanity. In real life, let's see, I'm skipping to the bottom here because in real life, he was born in 1962. He is an entire year older or younger than I am. I am 1 year older, so I will be the boss today. Oh, no, Bill's older than all of us.
Shape up.
Bill's the boss of us. At 15, he entered the gifted program at China University of Science and Technology. Neither Bill nor I did that. He came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and receive his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego.
I did do that.
And no, he didn't do that either.
Oh.
He currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego without Bill and I. Wow. I don't know what's wrong with me today. I feel a little silly. Dr. Chen, you're a serious guy, but you're kind of silly every now and then, but not a lot. not a lot. We'll stop screwing around now.
Well, thank you for having me back, and thank you for continuing the program.
Yep, you have a serious topic as always that gets zilch for airtime. I mean, people, the information on China, as you look at our news and whatnot, do you just shake your head at how little we actually report about China?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
However, they're of the most importance. We just came off the COVID threat from China. Not long, right?
No, it seems to never go away either.
Mm-hmm.
People are still wearing masks.
Yeah, and now we have another threat at the door already. And many people spoke about it. And according to the Undersecretary of Treasury Department, and this is one of the most important topic that the United States face now, and multiple secretaries from the U.S. government. Secretary of State, Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of Commerce have gone to China to talk about this topic. That is the overcapacity of China. What does that mean? China's overcapacity. Well, it's China's capacity to to swamp the whole world with its product. It exports so much that it worries the whole world, and this is becoming the greatest issue, according to Undersecretary for International Affairs, from of the Treasury Department. Okay. So, how overwhelming is China's overcapacity? Most of us are not economists, so I will minimize the more complicated number, but I'll just give you some easier number to understand.
Thanks.
Every day, there are 4 million mail packages arrive to the United States from China. 4 million. Okay? And the current U.S. law will treat those you know, packages. Those packages contain product from China, okay? And as long as their value is below 800, then they're tax-free.
Okay.
So every day, okay,
yeah,
multiply 4 million by 800, and then times that with 365.
No kidding. Well, that explains a lot.
That is a number that, you know, unaccounted for. This is because this is tax-free, okay? So they will not even account for the in the trade, you know, data, trade surplus, right? Okay. In year 2023, China exported 4.91 million motor vehicles to Europe and to the United States. Mainly Europe, okay? And a lot of those are electric automobiles. So China is now the world's largest electric vehicle exporter. And that is a 58% increase from year 2022.
Wow.
Yeah. And this year, in the first 5 months alone, 2.45 million electric vehicles exported. And that, again, is 26% increase over the same period in 2023.
It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you think about how heavy they are and all of those things. I mean, the cost of that you'd think would be, you know, prohibitive. Shipping them all here, you'd think it'd be cheaper to make them here, but...
Yeah. And then shipbuilding. China's shipbuilding order for the natural gas... shipping ships are now filled to 2027. And in terms of lithium battery, China's capacity of lithium battery production exceeds the world's need to 2050, I think.
Wow.
And, China's planned production capacity of electric vehicles in 2030, 5 years from now, will be over 70 million. Right. And the global electrical vehicle sales are estimated to only 44 million, projected to 44 million in year 2023. By the way, these numbers are all from what I just mentioned, the report from the Undersecretary of International Affairs, from the Department of the Treasury.
Wow.
And so these numbers are just like you said, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, why would we do that?
And why China would do that, right? And while another side of the, another unknown story, this story is not even covered by, you know, this Undersecretary Jay Shambaugh, was how competitive, internal competitive, how severe the internal competition inside China. Right? Not only China is overwhelming the global competition, because when China exports us, they export at a price that nobody can match.
Yeah.
And so they must be doing well inside China, right? No, not at all. Worse.
See, and that wouldn't make sense to people. They'd be thinking, you know, China is the one who's making out in this whole thing, and we're just funneling all this money into their society, so they're just getting wealthier and wealthier. And I know there's more to that story. Hold on for 5 seconds, and that's what I tell the dogs. That really means 2 minutes. I tell the dogs all the time, I'll be back in 5 seconds, and yeah, they fall for it all the time. Anyway, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Oh, thanks.
I think Pat Benatar is onto the gist of the program here. Okay, so China is sending all this stuff here. We're thinking that the country is getting wealthy, but you're saying that it's actually kind of not exactly the case.
They're quite the opposite.
Hmm.
It doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, kind of.
So, So. The whole world is trying to make sense of that. And they're, as I said, you know, this is not an economic class, and we will not, you know, go into all the theories. There are many theories, you know, from, our secretaries, our economists, our Wall Street, conglomerates, you know, they have explained this way and that way, and trying to change it this way and that way. Hopefully, at the end of the program, hopefully we can make some simple sense out of it. But anyway, so the world has called this China export as China shock number two, as China shock one has ever stopped, right? But there's a difference. There's a difference. There's no gap. I don't think there's a gap. The so-called China shock number one was when China was first admitted to WTO back in, you know, thanks to Bill Clinton. China was admitted to WTO in year 2000. There was a movie made by movie made about that called Death by China. Peter Navarro and wrote that book and made that movie, right? And so that movie talked about the damages of China's admission into WTO and how that, led to the cheap China product run over of the whole world. But those cheap products are about, clothes, shoes, socks, toothpaste, all those low-end products. So the low-end China export is called China Sha at that time. And now we're calling this high-end. Now, this cars, ships, solar panels, lithium batteries, these are high-end, right? More high-end industrial products. So they call it China's shock too. So I don't think China hasn't stopped exporting the low-end product, but that becomes the low-end product becomes, in terms of value, becomes minuscule compared to high-end product. But then there's a question then, who helped China to get those high-end capacity? So I'm going to leave that question now. We'll visit that later.
Okay.
But what I want to impress our audience is that this is the first time, I think, in the entire history of the United States that this mighty United States has ever been this threat. I just mentioned that, China shock number one, and then in between there's the COVID-19 now. This is another China shock, this overcapacity that worries our government. I don't remember in the history, ever since the British invasion of Washington, D.C., I don't remember after that we have ever been threatened. Even in World War I, World War II, it was not fought on this land. This land was never threatened. There was a civil war in between. And United States has always came out victorious in those previous international conflict, World War I, World War II, but the most resounding victory of the United States is Cold War. Because that is over the Soviet Union and the whole block of, dozen countries. And yet, we are right now not only threatened. I don't know how many Americans see that we are actually invaded. In a real sense, we're invaded by a virus, the Chinese Communist Party virus. And now we are invaded by 400 million package per day. We're invaded by an economic force. That force has changed our way of life. Probably not as dramatic as a war, but I would say more profound than a war. Maybe I'll have time to cover how that was, how our way of life has been changed by China's invasion, non-military invasion.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a very, very slow creep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not even perceptible. Even with the overcapacity, China's so-called overcapacity, I don't think our government has figured out the moral reason behind it. Okay? So, now, in addition to the overcapacity, there's another invisible threat. This is still far, but that's at an international stage as well. The conflict over Ukraine. Russia, now North Korea.
Yeah. Domino.
Are in that war. Who is behind that? Who is the economic force behind that? And then there's another conflict in Middle East. Hamas. Yeah. You know, all this tragedy in Middle East. And Israel now sees that behind all that is Iran. But who is behind Iran? Okay. So there is a, I don't know whether you caught this news. So a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, Israel military invaded Lebanon, right? To wipe out Hezbollah force there. And then at a tunnel, the Hezbollah and Hamas, they hide underground, right? But at one exit of those tunnels, underground tunnels, where the UN forces, UN peace maintenance or peacekeeping forces, that is the exit of the underground tunnel for the Hezbollah is less than 50 meters from the UN, peacekeeping forces.
Yeah, that seems a little weird.
Yeah, and then those peace forces there are mainly made by Chinese engineering soldiers. So there, in China military, there's this kind of military, this kind of forces called engineering. They are more like our contractors. In the United States, I don't think we have that kind of military force. So if we want to build anything, or contractor would do them. But in China, military would do a lot of them. So there's military engineers. And so the Chinese engineering military trying to intervene the Israel military forces. And so that led to a conflict that killed several dozen of this Chinese engineering soldiers. And China has been silent since. Because there's a political, it's a legal question. Why are you there? Why are you there in the name of United Nations? Right. Well, it turns out all those underground networks, by Hamas and Hezbollah, they were made, or at least the Chinese engineering military are helping them to construct those underground tunnels to fight or to, threat Israel.
And that's absolutely not being discussed anywhere.
Somewhere, yeah. Very little in the main, there's no discussion in the mainstream media.
Yes, no, none. I should say it's a big world out there. Somebody's probably discussing it. To say nowhere is probably that's inaccurate. But what people are seeing on a daily basis, no, China's not being linked to any of that. They're just sitting back and watching.
Correct. Communist China threat to the whole world, in particular to the leader of the free world, is so pervasive, so fundamental, that it doesn't even get discussed because it's probably been accepted as life itself. I don't know whether that's the right way to put it, but as you said, it's not reported.
No, not at all.
Well, as far as the North Korean troops in Ukraine, that has to be sanctioned by China, because China historically has propped up North Korea. So I don't think North Korea is doing that on their own. I think they're getting the green light from China, correct?
That's correct. But, Bill, you are absolutely right, but unfortunately, there are not many bills in the United States.
Well, I have to agree with you there.
Yeah.
Right. So, China must be, the Communist China must be behind that, but we are not talking about them.
Yeah.
So, this country is, the problem is that we're threatened by that. And our politician, our, you know, political scientists, our media, even when they discussed it, they only discuss at the technical level. They do not discuss at the policy level.
Well, I think they kind of, well, they kind of soft sell it.
That's right.
I mean, there are people in this country that are unclear about whether or not China is communist or not. That's not really a debatable item, is it?
I agree with you.
I mean, it's 100% communist, run by communists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it would be politically incorrect to discuss as communist issue, right? That's what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. So we're only talking about it at the technical level, you know. Economically, why is this? Why is that? Well, why is this? Why is that? Because it's communist.
Yeah. And well, so, besides, we do have people here, the Biden family, snuggling up to China, which would mean they were snuggling up with communists, so we'd better downplay that part, because otherwise that's bad. It's kind of interesting how all that kind of, is intertwined in a really unproductive kind of way. Let's take a really quick break before we continue down the trail so we don't cut you off again. Our guest is Dr. Shezong Chen. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
Back at it. All right, so the Chinese government, there's no debate open. This is a communist government. And you know, just for people who don't really understand that, since that is sort of part of our you know, discussion with this election coming up. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, socialism and communism and all that sort of thing. You've dealt with this firsthand. So, I don't know. Want to give people the elevator speech on communism? Is there such a thing?
I hope, you know, in the past, you know, 40 minutes or so, 30 minutes, I you know, I brought up the phenomena that China's threat of the United States, which is still not well publicized, as we just mentioned. They were presented to us in a different way, different form. So we will not be alert by it, right? You know, but the job loss, the COVID, they are all real, and so our government do have to report it, do have to respond to it in a way, but not in a way that helps people of this country to understand. So I am a Chinese American. That is, I'm a adopted American. And, you know, Aaron and Bill, you two are my best American friends. And so I am going to speak to you and our audience in the truest American spirit. I'll try to tell you as real as possible that how this came about. And so we have discussed, well, first talk about this topic on this station. That was back 2018, I guess.
Yeah, it was a long time. I'm going to look right now. July 2019.
2019, okay. All right, so but long before that, before the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, I have already been talking about this generous barbarism. Mm-hmm. That was the origin of all this communist China problem leading to now. And how that came about. Right? So that led us, you know, at that time we talk about the 1989 Beijing student demonstration, or the 1989 pro-democracy movement in China. And that movement itself, actually, is so significant that it doesn't get proper credit yet. But that movement was really the domino piece that causes downfall of the Berlin Wall, the killing of Ceausescu, the Romanian dictator, and then eventually the whole collapse of the Soviet bloc of communist country, the Warsaw, and that ended the Cold War. But the CCP survived because CCP is Chinese Communist Party, because Nixon came up, or rather Kissinger came up with this strategy of uniting China to isolate the Soviet Union. So there was this strategic partnership or alliance between Communist China back in the late 1970s to fight Soviet Union. And since then, China has been given a special treatment among all Communist countries. And so even when that when the massacre, Dreamforce massacre happened, President Bush, the senior president, Bush, still sent a secret convoy to visit China after the June 4th massacre, and to have some, you know, behind-the-door deal, not to pressure China too hard, communist China too hard. And that massacre also led to some political change inside China. In the uprising of a person called Jiang Zemin, in the normal world, he should have been as infamous as Stalin and Hitler. In the future, he will be. But he came to power in 1989, and he was the originator of this generous barbarism. Right? And the generous barbarism works this way. The military kind of barbarism in Hitler or in Stalin, they threaten us directly. If you do not surrender, we'll run over you. We will kill all of you. Right? So that compels, actually, resistance from the free world. And the free world, certainly at great cost, at great price, fought the war, fought them, and a lot of people died. Right? But the free world came out victoriously. Chinese Communist Party do not have that kind of power. They don't. They didn't have the military muscle like Hitler, like Stalin. They did not have the economy either. So, Jiang Zemin came to the United States in a free world and said, look, we're different. We do not threaten you. Not only we will not threaten you, we will share our prosperity with you if you're willing. Right? We will let you in on our massive market. Right? And you don't have to do anything. You don't have to sacrifice anything. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we just want you to do nothing. The only condition is you look away from what we do. And they are very generous, right? They're only barbaric to its own people.
I was going to say, you, when you say look away from what we do, you mean to the people in their own country, their own people.
Right.
Look away from the human rights abuses. Look away from the forced organ harvesting. Look away from all that.
This is kind of offering that the world has never seen. The free world has never seen. The free world was used to see, you know, gun barrels. They used to know the nuclear war. They used to, you know, see the Berlin Wall. But this kind of offering, this kind of temptation is something that was never seen before. So, no free world government, particularly their leader, United States, did not know how to deal with it. So one by one, they all fall in. But they fall in also because our great Wall Street, our multinationals, our globalists, right? At that time it was a global economy, that was, you know, at its height. And China was the greatest attraction to that. So with Wall Street, with our multinationals, this China policy was born, that we will have China to prosper. In the process, China will make money, and then when it makes money, the middle class will rise up. They'll make China a democracy. In a former Congress, Congressman Rohrabacher's language, he said, "How a Nazi make a liberal?" That was he calls that the U.S. policy on China. Unfortunately,
it's kind of amazing when you look at it, because honestly, you all the years we have spoken with you, all the different programs, and I guess I should really not miss the opportunity to encourage people to please go and look. We have been doing shows on China since November of 2018. With a bunch of different people, right straight long before COVID, we were talking about China, which was odd since no one, I remember the first shows we did, we would say if somebody in the program would talk about the CCP, no one knew what that meant. We had to continue to define that's the Chinese Communist Party. That's come back kind of into the American lexicon, but at that time, it was very much under the radar. And when we were, let's see, some of the early ones, we spoke about the forced organ harvesting in the beginning of, looks like 2020, really. And people hadn't heard about that at all. They had no idea that was going on. People just getting snatched off the street. You're a political prisoner. You look healthy, too. How's your liver? We have somebody with some money who wants to travel here and get a new one. And guess what? We picked yours. And I don't mean to be cavalier about it, because that's actually what happens. So if this is a new idea for you, please go to the archives. They are free to listen to. They're commercial free. They're just an MP3 file. Just click on it and listen. And I think you'll be blown away. So when people say, furthering this the generous barbarism, right? They are, quote, generous with us. Here are all these goods and services, or goods that are cheap. I shouldn't say services, but services stay at home and they're bad. So the goods come here cheap as long as we don't hold them to account for any of the human rights abuses that happen to their own people. It's really something to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was when China was, when the CCP was weak. The only thing it has is the 1.5 billion people that it holds hostage. That was its only attraction. But the CCP was able to hold us to that generous barbarism, because the CCP found the most powerful, I realized later, more now, that the CCP found the most powerful weapon against the United States, against Americans, and that is our own greed. Behind the overcapacity in China now is the over-greed. And so that is our own desire to make more and more money, never enough money. There's no, the money, so many containers can be filled up, but our desire for money can never be filled up. It was that greed that allowed the CCP to getting into our lives more and more, to control our, to impact our lives more and more,
Well, and to turn a blind eye to the Confucius Institutes here in this country, the influence, that's how we met you. You wrote an article, mm-hmm. Can China-fornia ever become California again? That's how I met you. I was like, what the heck? We need to hear from this guy. He's our hostage here, the second hour, but we do have to take a really quick break for the news, and we will come back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us commercial free and free to listen to at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Stay tuned and embrace to this.